in a diner somewhere in Iowa, I imagine my father meeting the future president. He would have been sitting at the counter, waiting for a greasy truck part to arrive from Davenport, when Nixon walked into the joint. He would have been more attentive to the slim, black-haired waitress with the coffee pot than the politician's entourage. But when she turned to take another's order, he would have noticed the dark gray wool suit Nixon wore through the Midwestern heat of August, and the way Nixon awkwardly flirted with the folks in the booths lining the window, mainly old women who barely looked up from dunking their dry toast into tea. My father would have shaken the hand of Nixon, who made his way one by one down the working-class men on stools at the counter. But my father would have said later that Nixon's hands were damp and pink, soft, like some rich girl's. And when my father returned home to my mother the next week, after unloading Lazy Boy recliners and boxes of record albums and banana seat bikes, he would have said to her, "If that's the best we can do, we got a whole world of trouble." But there would have been a change in my father after Nixon won the White House. My father would have become interested in things he'd never questioned before. While driving his rig cross-country, he would have killed boredom by holding imagined conversations with Nixon, telling what Nixon ought to do to ease the plight of the working man. At first, it would be funny when my father would say at dinner, "You know what I told Dick when I was going through Oklahoma? I said, 'Dick, I ain't like you, Dick. I didn't get to college. I never had things handed to me. I got one suit, and it's for funerals.'" He'd shake his fork at the TV and joke, "I told my man there, the only China I care about is what them housewives unwrap, me watching and waiting for all hell to break loose when they find a cracked teacup." My father's conversations would grow darker with each year of Nixon's administration. "You should have got them out, Dick, goddammit," he'd swear, slowing behind the funeral processions along some state highway, driving past, looking in his rear view at the old men, hats on their hearts, standing next to their cars parked on the shoulder of the road. Then, with wrecked grief, "Get them out now." He'd have explained how he'd been there too, but got turned back because when a boy his heart was torn apart by rheumatic fever. That night, when at home watching Nixon resign, for once he would have been happy, or at least happier, seen a larger world view and understood something complicated was trying to be put right, instead of crying and agitating his ill-treated heart and blaming himself for the rest of his life that it was his kid brother on his second tour who was killed in the bush of Vietnam. Or at least that's what I can imagine.